This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. It's Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedics show. He's here going to be discussing something interesting called, we're going to be talking about training like an athlete. And joining us also is sports therapist York Tashman. And York is from Germany. He's been here since 1997. And we're going to be discussing what it takes to be an athlete. What happens inside your body when we undergo an extreme regime? If you have a question for us, the number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Thank you very much. We are well.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Harjit?
I'm great as usual.
Okay. And you've known York for a long time?
Everyone knows York. No, I mean, he used to be involved in the national hockey team.
Okay.
And he was a friend of the captain, Sarjit. So, you know, I knew Sarjit and he kept on mentioning York's name.
Mm-hmm.
And some sort we got linked up.
Okay. What brought you here in 1997, York?
It was actually a very funny story. Our Center of Excellence in Leipzig was no more the same, and I was looking for a new opportunity. And then one of my friends told me, hey, York, there's a position in Malaysia. You interested? And I said, why not? Yes. But I was thinking I have no clue to win anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then suddenly I got a call. I still remember that it was 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was a guy on the phone from Malaysia and I said, you're Mr. York? I said, yes, I am. Oh, I'm coming next week to Leipzig. I want to talk to you. I say, about what? About the job in Malaysia. I say, oh, wow.
And the rest is history.
You've been here since
22 years now since you have been here. What's that journey been like? Did you come in your capacity as a sports therapist?
Yes. And it was actually a quite great challenge for me because sports therapy in the 90s in Malaysia was totally unknown. Most of the guys know physiotherapy quite well and very good, but what actually a sports therapist is doing, return to sports with all the testing stuff, what is included. A lot of people say, well, I don't know, what is it, athletic training? I say, no, it's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. So it was a great challenge for me, and I have to thank you to give me the opportunity to that to Dr. Ramlan. He was the guy actually employed me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he believed in me. And then, yeah, after 1 year, I realized, okay, it's getting better and better. And also people recognize what I'm doing. Then I had this actually great opportunity when someone asked me, oh, you actually study sports science. You're coming from track and field. I say, yes. So what is actually your specialty? And I said, it's jumps. Oh, our high jumper, Luke Humsey, is looking actually for a new coach. I said, oh, I don't want. But some people convinced me, and it was actually great to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And what we can say, for me, one of the greatest athletes that Malaysia ever produced.
Okay. Do you agree, Dr. Arjun?
Do you think
he's done a good job, 22 years?
Yeah, I think he just likes Asian food too much. I mean, but I think he's...
he's not answering the question.
Yes. Yeah, I think he's done a great job. That's why we're having him on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who else can speak about 20 years?
22.
22, yes.
Okay, 20. The first 2 years, you were just ordinary. 20 years of being in our National Sports Institute and dealing with elite athletes. We have always wanted to speak about what goes on in their mind.
Yep.
What is like a daily routine for them and how they get as good as they can get. And I guess he's a good person to speak to.
Okay. And what is York's job? I mean, you're a doctor, obviously. You've subspecialized in sports medicine. But how do you work with somebody like York?
Okay. I think there are not many like him. So probably for me, it's like, I tend to see patients when they get injured, or York says, go see Harjit. So I try to fix the anatomical problem. And if they undergo a surgery, there will be a period of therapy where we get the joint, you know, the effects of surgery, like the swelling, the pain and all sorted out. Then we get the joint to function appropriately. We get the part to heal. Now, to get them back on the field, it's a different ball game altogether. You actually work them on and then move on to very specific exercises. And then there are testing which is done to see whether the strength of that injured part is up to mark for training and for participation. So that whole part is yours.
So would I be correct when I say it's...
I'm the carpenter.
You're the carpenter. What about the... Is there a job for the physiotherapist in this before they come to York?
Definitely, yes. Right after surgery, you would require physiotherapy to reverse the adverse effects of surgery, like swelling, the mobility. All that can be done by a therapist. York is very specialized. He deals with them when the initial surgical process has been done and they are ready for things which are advancing them towards returning to play.
Okay, all right.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, it's also to say, with my whole respect from all the physios, while we are coming in, especially when it's coming to return to sports, you have time as a physio to take care of at least for 4 to 5 hours. So you can't, it's actually impossible. So we are not taking the job away, we are working together. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing.
Okay, so you're the bridge between the physiotherapist and them getting back to the field.
Yes, also the bridge to the coach.
Right, okay, as well.
Yeah.
Okay, could you give us an overview of what an athlete's regime actually looks like?
Number one is dedication. It's very important. You need the stamina, yeah? It's a hard work. And you have to think where you want to go and what you want to do. So when you're coming to a regime, actually, I'm not a big fan of this word regime, mm-hmm. but okay, what do you want in your life? You want to be an athlete? And this is not easy. This is absolutely not easy. Yeah, because you have to suffer. What people can play outside, you can't. Yeah, because you have to train. People, yeah, think about the school. Maybe your parents are not happy when you're dropping. So
academically dropping.
Yeah, extremely dropping. And maybe your performance also because you're getting scolded, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. So it's not easy, yeah? We was lucky in Malaysia. I mean, Nicole David said it already. Yeah, she had to suffer as well. It was not easy, you know, to struggle between where I'm on the go, yeah? So when it's coming to a regime, you have to be very tough to yourself.
Discipline.
Discipline is one of the top things.
Who's the youngest athlete you've worked with in Malaysia?
Honestly? Mandela. Mandela, you know.
Mandela, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but it was more, she was, I guess, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, she's 25, so you can think. Yeah.
Okay. Shall we use Pandalela as an example and how you actually got her ready and, you know, into who she is today or what she achieved?
No, I'm honestly, we are only beside. This is actually a job of the coach. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are only a service team to help them to go back. So when you are injured, maybe you have a twisted ankle, they are with us for 3 to 6 weeks. After that, yeah, they're doing much, maybe prevention training, but this maybe once or twice a week. The rest, they are full with the coaches. So what you can say, maybe you guideline that. But when I coach Luke Hamsi, I have him every day. So, and then you know exactly what it means to train people. Yeah? So, because beside my job in ISN, what I had before, or what I had there, I had to train Luke Hamsi. Luckily, I was single. Because when I'm not single, you can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so amount of time that you spend with athletes. Yeah, and this is not easy. Because after my walk, 5 o'clock, we have training. Sometimes until 8:30. So it's not easy.
What did you do at the National Sports Institute?
Me, I was a sports therapist, mm-hmm. so I was taking care of these injured people. And beside that, luckily, yeah, I had the time to do that, to train the high jumper. Beside that. Yeah, and also because of a good boss, he said also in the morning when you have training, you can have 2 hours off.
Okay. So are you still single now? Or?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just curious, sorry. 20 years later, whether that was a sacrifice you had to make? I was just asking.
I don't know how that went.
I was just asking if he's still sacrificing.
Dedication and discipline.
He does say.
Yeah. You see?
I'm not single.
Yeah, well, you see?
That out of the way.
That's why you're not a sports therapist. But when you talk about getting the athletes back after injury and rehab, what are some of your challenges?
Oh, a lot. It's...
The doctor is his challenge.
The doctor is one of them, of course. Then you have to think, what has happened? Athletes are maybe, they're on the top of your line right now. Suddenly they are injured. And they will think, why me? What has happened? Yeah? Because when you're injured, most of the coaches, they are not interested because you are injured. It's because they have to produce medals. Yeah. Right now you're not there. So what has happened with me? Why what has happened to me? So, and then you need a good team with a doctor, with a physio, sports therapy, to say, come, everything is okay. You're not the only one to have this injury. This is actually my point every time I say, you're not the only one.
So it's very psychological.
It is. And we have also very good mental coaches in ISN, that they help them to go back. But this is one of the toughest challenges because a lot of people are tough and say, oh, easy for me, I can do this.
And they will want to tend to go back full steam when they can't.
Yes.
So it's again speaking to them, psyching them that they can't. Why is the doctor the challenge?
Because he's pushing you.
No, I actually can contribute to that.
Yes.
Let's look at how we are progressing. Now we've got people like York who have come into the team. Okay. The doctors previously, like say an orthopedic surgeon, treating the patient. I can give you a simple example. When I was in training in UKM, we had a state athlete coming in and the sports surgeon was explaining to him like, okay, you've got an ACL and this is how you're going to be, how long you're going to be away. And it was very obvious the athlete wasn't interested in what was going to be done. All he asked was, when can I play? And my sports surgeon at that time, at the end, he looks around and he tells me, I don't understand. I'm explaining to him the risk of surgery and he's telling me when can I play? And at that moment, sports orthopedics got me because I understood that. I mean, his whole life from the time he was an adolescent, training, going to a sports school, becoming a professional player, circulates around the ability to play and perform. So, of course, he's going to ask you that. Now, if you get a doctor who doesn't understand that, and you deal with a coach that's only going to be performance-based, and you have a physio who is going to be ordinary, you're not going to get the player back. So I think when hopefully he deals with doctors who understand this, then the player gets back. I think it's as simple as that.
Okay.
It's only not only the players, also normal, people. You know, they also need help, to go back, what we call it, normal routine in life, or you play maybe football 3 times a week and you want to play again, so you need people to help you.
Yeah,
I remember I had a coach who used to come with the player. We operated on him. The player was really on in the sense that he wanted to get back. He was following physio perfectly. And on week 2.5, he comes to therapy and with his coach, but his mood was totally off. So I was walking in and I normally, banter with them a bit and he wasn't interested. So I was thinking something's wrong. But who's the best person to tell you? It's the coach. So the coach just takes me aside and said, don't worry. He had an argument with his girlfriend.
Okay.
So they do have ordinary problems. Yeah. I mean, not ordinary, that's a big problem.
I mean, they are people.
Yeah, they are. So, even that, we are thinking that something's gone wrong. He's not interested in rehab anymore, but it's just an everyday problem. And if you have a coach that communicates well and you create an environment where the coach can speak to you well, then it's good.
Okay, so we're discussing training like an athlete. What does it take to be an athlete? Joining us, Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, for his monthly show, and also in the studio with us, York Tashman, who's a sports therapist who has been formerly with ISN and done a lot of work since 1997 here in Malaysia from Germany. If you have a question for him, give us a call. The number is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. In the studio with us, Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, and York Tashman, who is a sports therapist. We are discussing what it takes to be an athlete. York, can anyone train like an athlete?
Of course. Nothing wrong with it.
What does it take to be sort of an elite athlete from just a normal fitness regime?
Honestly, so we had it already before. What do you want to do? Yeah, you want to be fit, or you want to be a top athlete? And of course, you have to choose which kind of event you want to do. Yeah, so it's not easy when you're 150 in your height and you want to be a basketball player. I guess you're facing some problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can train like a basketball player. Why not? There's nothing wrong with it. Yeah, but you have to accept you maybe not be in a top level. Yeah, but everyone can do something. This is nothing you said, no, you can't. Of course you can. Yeah? And that we said you need physical requirements, a lot of people said, no, you don't need. Yeah? When you see now this funny shows, for me, Biggest Loser, I mean, people losing 40, 50 kilos and you're getting fit and you, wow, how you do that? Yeah? And you have a very good, yeah? Maybe better lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because I can't say every time the regime is good. Yeah? But you have a very good will to do this. Yeah, it's not easy. Of course, we are, maybe as the sports medicine people, when you're maybe 200 kilo and you're losing 50, your joints are maybe not perfectly anymore, and then you do sports, I guess Harjit can say something about this, there is a huge challenge for you as well.
Okay, we have, just before we go into Dr. Harjit and what he has to say, we have Ainul on the line. Ainul, you have a question. Hi, Ainul, you have a question?
Yeah, hi, doctor. I am very into competitive sport. I play basketball, so just a few questions. If we have games back-to-back, for example, how can we best minimize soreness before the next game? And what are the differences in intensity and duration when training in and off-season and in-season program?
Okay, that's okay. I know it's just gone up. All right. So minimize how do we minimize soreness really between games, and especially when you have back-to-back games?
Okay, thank you very much for your question. I know. I think day in, day out, if we play at increased intensity more than what we naturally do, especially if we have back-to-back games, the warm-up and the warm-down after sport is extremely important, because that itself tends to minimize the soreness. And if in training you have built up your capacity appropriately, then you don't feel too sore, although a little bit of soreness is actually natural and normal. Ice baths help. A lot of sports people use sports massages after activity to control the soreness. But I think that if you are not on the elite level, just a proper warm up and warm down does help a lot.
Yes. Would you agree?
Yes, 100%. I agree. And also, you have to think which kind of level you are. What was your training before? Yeah, when you feel maybe the first time the soreness, you can check what I did. Yeah, maybe you train one day before your competition. This is maybe not perfectly for you, so you have to make a rest and then you start. So we don't know her regime, what you call it.
Yeah.
So, but what Dr. Harjit said, I will fully agree.
Okay, but for the normal person, you don't have a masseur. You don't have ice baths, right? I mean, she's a
ice bath.
She's a basketball player.
Yes.
And how best should, you know, the ordinary athlete?
Okay. I think it's easy for the man on the street playing a game of basketball, going in for a tournament where you tend to play two or three games more than you normally play. A little bit of soreness is normal. If it doesn't impair your performance for the next game, it's okay. Put in an ice pack in between the games actually helps. Hydrate yourself very, very well and enjoy.
And Ainul also asked, duration between in and in off-season and in-season programs, how do you manage that?
Yeah, so the way I look at it, unless you are an elite performer, you don't have this off-season, in-season thing for the general public. But a lot of us, you don't totally cut off off-season. You still have pre-season, some amount of activity pre-season to build you up so that when you start training back again, you don't start on a very low base.
Okay. York, you want to share with us, you worked with high jumper Lou Kumsi. You want to share that experience with us and how you got him going?
Of course. I mean, you have to plan the whole year, what we call it. You know, you have a periodization plan, you have maybe a double periodization. That means you have two competition periods. So, and then you have this pre-season where you have to tough training. And then you have, they call it competition season. And then you have the off-season. But off-season for high-performance athletes actually doesn't exist because we call it actually, they still do something. But maybe not like Kumsi track and field related. You do something else. You play football, handball, you go swimming or something like that. But you keep your fit. Yeah? So also for her, not to say, maybe when she think about which kind of prevention training she's doing, what is quite important as well. Yeah, I don't know how old she is, yeah, but it's especially basketball is quite, they call it actually no body contact, but this doesn't exist anymore. There's full body contact, and this is a very high risk on injuries as well.
Okay. And when you talk about a person's body undergoing athletic training, what's actually happening in the person's body?
Yeah, okay. I'll feel that.
Okay.
Now, I think that there are changes during training and sport. I think if you look at the bone, okay, a lot of us think that the bone is just something that the muscles attach to for movement, but it's actually a living organ and it's very dynamic. It actually responds to the amount of loading which is occurring on it. That means if you are doing a load-bearing exercise and certain parts of the bone are put under more pressure than the others, bone is built around those parts, taken off from the other part which is shielded from stress. That means if you look at your thigh bone, the inner part of the thigh bone tends to build more bone. And that only comes with activities which involve weight bearing. That means some amount of sporting activities, removing cycling or swimming. Now, if you look at muscle activity, you have exercises which are aerobic in nature, which is good for the heart and lung to a certain briefly. The resistance training where the body is loaded builds the muscles. Now, you then have certain activities which work on the muscles as the muscle is contracting, and you have activities which worked on a lengthening muscle. And by loading the muscle, in the sense that putting some amount of stress on the muscle, over time the muscle is allowed to become stronger, bigger, and function more efficiently. So I think there are a lot of changes that exercise brings. Now, when you work on an athlete, you take this to the next level and you do them the intensity is much higher, it's more scientific, and it's intense.
Does it differ for the male and the female?
He had an answer for that.
I'm honestly to you, I like to train with women much more, or girls, because they're much tougher than men.
Tougher in what sense?
She likes that, huh?
I realized that.
She jumped on that straight
It's
away.
A mental thing, isn't it?
No, it's not only a mental thing. When a girl say to you in training, coach, I can't, that means she can't. Mm-hmm. When a boy or a man tell me, oh, I can't, so I don't believe. So you can put on something. But when a girl tell you straight, I can't train anymore, it's the finish line. You have to accept it as a coach.
What does that mean?
That girls are much tougher. Boys try to go around in the training. Girls don't. Do you want to be up? Mm. It's my experience, and I'm very clear with this, because I had a lot. And that's why I said it's my, compliments to the women and the girls. they are much tougher than men.
So you're saying that the boys want the easier way up?
Exactly. Mm. Not all, but 80%.
I'm silent.
I mean, I'm just thinking they're lazy, lah.
In Malay, that's a nice word, eh? Malas.
Yeah. Malas, yeah. Yeah. Oh man, what does that mean?
It's not laziness. It's. I was the same. I was also a national athlete in Germany. Of course, you sometimes, you know, you have something else in your mind. And when I coach the people, especially a woman, they were so focused. So what I say, this is for me was actually more fun to train with girls because you know exactly. They will do that.
They know where they're going.
Yeah.
Mm, okay. And in terms of body type, Dr. Harjit, how does that differ in terms of athletic training for the man and the woman?
I think we were discussing this. I think the concept of body type no longer plays a big part anymore.
In gender, as far as gender is concerned. Yeah. Okay.
So I think that the structure is the same. The concepts are the same. If you compare male and female, females probably start at a lower strength level, occasionally at a lower baseline, and they build up the same way as a male would. And the response of the body is the same. The physiology is still the same. I mean, apart from the differences of having, that cyclical menstrual cycles and all that, which change a bit. But otherwise, it's exactly the same.
Okay, really. And, you know, if you talk about supplements and stuff like that, do we really need it to become elite athletes?
Yes. You need some supplements, but you can't. I mean, when you do all this, when you think about the training, the intensity, what you have, think about diving, because I'm working, or hockey, when you have 6-7 hours training, also when you eat good, you can't replace it every time or take it back with the food what you're eating. So you need something what is between. Some people have iron, and the blood is lesser than normal. So you have to take this because you have to train, Think about the fatigue in training. Some people, we was wondering why they are fast fatiguing so fast. And then you check it out, something was missing. Was a calcium, magnesium, etc. And then you realize, oh my God, Then you put it on and you get better and better. So it's I'm not against supplements. I'm quite, But in Malaysia, you can be very happy. You have very good fruits here. You can use this as well. Yeah, it's not only you go to the pharmacy and buy the vitamins. Check that out, what you can find also outside in the nature.
Why Malaysia and the fruits? I'm sure we have fruits all over the world.
Yes, but think about your lovely mango. It's a lot of good stuff inside. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have
banana.
Then it's not like it's like an apple, but it's not an apple. It's green. Guava.
Guava.
Very good. Yeah. So yes.
Okay. Interesting. What about diet? That's a tricky one because we have a whole load of unhealthy stuff here as well.
Of course. Yeah, but this is the same. But we call it, you know, which kind of diet you want to do. Yeah, we just had it before, you know, about my seafood diet.
Mm-hmm. and what he meant is seafood.
And eat.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's not a very good diet. No, it's not. In case someone's got doubts about it. But I think what we need to do is we need to balance what we take in on what we lose out during exercise. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you get a balance, then it's going to be good. But I think if you take sports as something that you're passionate about, then the other thing is you will tend to move away from bad habits like smoking, a bit of alcohol here and there, because I think those also inhibit sports performance.
And how do they have a choice at all if you're part of the national team, for an example?
No, you don't have a choice. I mean, you have to follow the regime anyway. And of course, I mean, the good one for us was some couple of years ago, one of the greatest basketball players in the world was in Malaysia, and nobody knew that, Dirk Nowitzki. And it was a pleasure with us to work with him. And he was telling us some stories about regime and what. And of course, what he said, look, I'm 10 months a top athlete, but in 2 months, I'm also a human. And I want to eat my pizza.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, yeah? But when you want to go to this high level, you have to satisfy a lot of things.
Even the 2 months?
When I tell you what we was eating with him in these 2 months, he was said, no. It was, no, but he ordered a pizza from Martin. I asked him why. He said, Jörg, I love it. And the fat have to drop. And I wanted to with my tongue. And he said, wow. He said, because 10 months I have to train. And there is no red wine. There is nothing. There's only healthy food.
Right. Okay, there's a lot of sacrifices involved,
that is,
isn't it?
Yeah.
We have a question here from Vimalin, who's asking, is it wise for a 54-year-old non-athlete who just jogs a couple of times a week to start to train for competitive sports? Your thoughts? At 54? We're not talking about elite athletes here, but just competitive sports.
I think there's no problem with that.
Exactly.
I mean, you want to be safe, you get what we call a pre-participation evaluation. You can see your physician, make sure nothing else major is going on with you, whether your heart's healthy, your joints are fine. And after that, you start to train, but you don't train as if you're a national athlete. You train with a low base and you build it up. I think...
Yes, also for me, I mean, my advice for her, there is a lot of good running clubs in Kuala Lumpur always here. Why not she call one of the clubs and there are some good coaches there and they will advise very well, because when you do your own thing, and this can be maybe in a negative way, better you join a club and you run with them and it's more fun anyway.
Right. Get some guidance,
yes,
for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we're discussing what it takes to be an athlete with Dr. Harjit Singh and Jörg Tashman. If you have a question for us, it's 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll find out how you measure fitness. How do you measure an athlete's fitness? Whether they're progressing or not? Is there a test, for an example? Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, in for his monthly show. Joining us also, Jörg Tashman, who's a sports therapist who has done a lot of work with athletes here in Malaysia over the last 22 years. Or 20 years, as Dr. Harjit insists. well, you've been here since 1997, so that's 22 years in total. We were talking about how best to measure the fitness of an athlete. And how do you do that?
It depends which kind of event you want to do, but normally it's very straight. We have speed, we have explosive power, we have strength, and we have endurance. So, and then you have different kinds of measurements, what you do. I mean, endurance is for me the easiest, yeah? But you said how we do that. Is it you're running maybe a 4,000 meter, you measure your time, then you go do a good training, and you measure after 6 weeks, after your period of training, and you measure again, and then you see you improve or... you didn't improve.
What are some of the reasons why somebody wouldn't be improving, for an example?
Wrong training.
Wrong training,
yes. Yeah. It's very easy. It's the same when you do the strength, you know, you have bench pressed, maybe you press 60 kilos and you're every time, it's a stagnation. So there must be a reason. It's your training.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's tailored for everyone differently.
Of course. I mean, for me, it's every time when it's coming to training. So Harjit is looking different from me and you look different from her. You can't say you have the same program. This doesn't work. So everyone needs a tailor-made program for themselves. Yeah, and you have to find out what is the best for you.
Okay, we have Kuang on the line. Kuang, you have a question. Go ahead.
Hi. So I'm 33 years old and I have some cartilage damage in both my knees. The doctor I went to said it's... Stage 3 or stage 4 cartilage damage. Just wondering, is it advisable for me to try and take up more intense, more competitive sport? Like right now, I play casually, a futsal casually, about once a week. If I wanted to, I don't train for running a marathon or something, would that be advisable?
Okay, and did you say you were 33 years old?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Dr. Harjit.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kuang. I think the main thing is, the first question I would have is, are you going to be treated for that cartilage injury? Now, the goal of any visit to the doctor or treatment is to get you better, to bring you back to enjoy whatever sports that you want to do whenever possible. So in answering your question, I feel that if you're appropriately treated and rehabilitated and then start getting back to training and progressively the knee behaves, I don't see why you can't partake in competitive sport depending on what you choose. But on the flip side, if the damage precludes that, then a discussion with your treating surgeon is necessary, because with a little bit of modification, you can take part in other types of sports which don't load the knee so much.
Do you want to just explain what a cartilage, third stage cartilage injury is?
Yeah, so to keep it simply, I think stage four is the worst that you can possibly have.
Which means you have no cartilage?
Yeah, which means that that damage is right up to the underlying bone. And grade one is when the cartilage is intact but softened out. And grade three is something in between. Now, it also depends on which part of the knee that cartilage is coming from, whether it's from the kneecap, whether it's from the femur or the tibia, which bears weight when you are standing, or maybe it's the part that bears weight when the knee is bent 30 degrees, which is possibly the position most of us are at if you're going to play futsal. And if you primarily have predominantly a cartilage injury, your ligaments or menisci are okay and you appropriately treat it and follow the rehab protocol tailored for your injury, the goal is to get you back to sports. If you love sports, you can get back to sports. But there will be a long process to this.
Okay, long process, which brings me to your, based on the elite athletes you work with and with injuries, after injuries, can they ever return to regular pace of playing sports pre-injury?
Can.
Really, 100%?
Yes, sometimes better than before. Because the good one is when people are injured, you have all the data from before. So you know exactly how to bring him up again. When we start talking about the speed, the endurance, the explosive power, so you have all the data from before because the coach can give it to you. Yeah? So you have this, you know exactly this is the level we have to be, maybe in when you have an ACL injury in 7 or 8 months. And this is your target. And as an athlete, this is your motivation, actually, and this is very good. And when you're a good sports therapist, then you said, oh, maybe I can improve your speed after this injury as well. And because your speed is not actually perfectly, yeah? Or your explosive power, yeah? So, and the people are quite happy. And then you can say, look, we improve here, but we want to go to the next stage. We are right here. We want to go up to the next stage, yeah?
As you said, it's very psychological. That sort of plays a huge role in this, isn't it?
Yes and no, but it's a lot of training, you know, but we call it, there's a lot of sports science beside it, you know. You have to know how to train the people, yeah? Because when you train every time the same, you can't improve. Because the body needs adaptation. You don't have any adaptation, this doesn't work. So when you're running together maybe every day for 4,000 meters, we can't improve. So we need something between, but our body accepts as adaptation.
Yes. It adapts very quickly, doesn't it? Our bodies. Quite clever, I have to say.
It's irritating when you're on a diet.
Yeah. It is, I know.
Yeah, after a while, it optimizes the way it burns the fuel and the weight doesn't go down. I think that's a simple way. I think the way I look at these kind of scenarios is that if you build a trust with the athlete or your patient, then things go smoothly because he then knows that you want to take him to what he was before and maybe better. If he doesn't trust you, nothing works.
And are there injuries which permanently affect your performance?
Think about lower back problems. What is actually in our population, more than 50, 60% of athletes have lower back problems. And this, of course, when you can't train in the same intensity and load what you had before, that will affect your performance immediately. Yeah. Also, a lot of people or a lot of athletes hiding some injuries and you're wondering as a coach what's happened. Yeah, because they want to go for this competition. But actually you say, oh, we have to be in this stage, but we are not. What is the reason? Yeah. And then when you go a little bit deeper and then you find out, oh, sorry. Yeah. I twisted my ankle 3 weeks ago and you said, why you didn't tell me?
Mm-hmm.
So now it's too late. We can't do anything anymore. Yeah. not a real twist of ankle, but normally a small thing can be happen. It does affect you immediately in your training.
Okay. You mentioned lower back problem. Is that an Asian thing?
It's the same. In Germany, 80% of the German population facing once in a lifetime back problems.
Why do athletes, elite athletes, face lower back problems? What is it?
We have to think in three different kinds of ways. Number one, you have short and strong muscles. Yeah. So when this short and strong muscles getting too strong, so your hip will move in the wrong direction. So what we call it, the hip flexor and the hip extenders. So when there's something happen, yeah, you come in a lot of doses, but it's probably not good for your athlete. Secondly, which kind of load of training you're doing. Yeah. Maybe your technique is totally wrong when you're doing squats, deadlift, etc. So a lot of people coming to our clinic and said, oh, sorry, my lower back is painful. Yeah, what you have done? Oh, I did a new, we did something new, we did deadlift. Okay, can you show me your technique? And then you see the technique, said, oh my God. Yeah? So the people have to think when you do some new stuff that the technique is first, is the right way. And not only the load. You put higher, 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 it's maybe not good for your lower back. And then you'll suffer. And who was facing lower back problems when you can't sleep? Do you know exactly? I don't want to have this again.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we all have lower back issues. We don't even have to be elite athletes for that.
Yeah.
Dr. Harjit,
yeah,
they're all coming to you.
I think the most important thing is that if you're going to identify the problem is that you have to speak to the patient in detail. Because if you look at the lower back, you can have an acute injury like York says, okay, he did a particular exercise the wrong way and it started being painful. So that's acute. But you have the other group where it's an overuse injury. That means the regime has been okay, but it's been tweaked quite a bit. The intensity was raised inappropriately and you get back problems. So then once you identify the cause, then you can work on the cause. It doesn't matter whether you are a weekend warrior, you are a sedentary person, or you are an elite athlete. Lower back problems do happen. But we have had good athletes coming back. I think Tiger Woods had a lower back problem. And
just did very well.
Yeah. I never expected him to come back from that. But, you know,
didn't you expect him to come back from that?
I don't
know.
The lower back, I mean, he tried. He tried a lot. He tried everything and something seems to have worked.
Yeah.
Don't know
what. No questions.
Mm. So it's very highly possible to come back and
of course.
Top your performance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And would you say that being athletic is synonymous to being fit? I think a lot of people make that, you know.
Actually, you have to think what means fitness, actually.
Yeah.
It's, for me, it's a condition to being physically fit and healthy. And that's it. And when you are athlete, you're actually fit, yeah? So when you try to do something, maybe you have your regime. A lot of people said, oh, I can't do that because my working hour is this. But I said, why not you change a little bit? Why not you going up the stairs when you work in the 10th floor, but you're not going down the stairs? You only take up. So that is a very good training already, yeah? And your muscles will be very happy. But when you every time say, oh, I can't do this, it doesn't work. So you have to find something what you like to do. Yeah? Some people like to walk for half an hour outside and say, this is very happy. Yeah? Be happy with this. You do something for your body and he will say thank you. But you can't say every time, oh, you must do this. When every time is a must behind, people will stop.
You know, when you deal with elite athletes, how do you prevent overuse injuries?
It's a very tricky question.
Yeah.
No, because for
2 months you can swim or cycle or do something different, but for 10 months you're doing the same thing over and over.
It's not the same. Yeah, when you think about a good training, I mean, doesn't matter it's football because you have your season, your peak season where you go up, and then you have your lower one, and you go to periodization when you have blocks from three. What is important when you train that you every time bring up your load, then you reduce the load and you go up again. Yeah, we call it like a super compensation that the body adapt to the training and not the training adapt to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually rule number one in sports science. And when you follow this rule, yeah, and you do what we call it before, adaptation, you will see there's a great success. But when you do every time the same, of course, then some of the muscles are very high used and another one are not used.
Would you agree, Dr. Harvey?
Yeah, I think I agree absolutely. I think the problem with overuse injuries is, one, if your technique is improper, you're going to get it faster. If your intensity is unmonitored, you're going to definitely get it sooner or later. The athlete which is at an elite level, I mean, nature also selects the athlete to a certain extent. Your potential to heal, I've seen it day in, day out, that somehow they tend to heal better. But I think that everything is very scientific. And the coach and the player itself can feel something wrong. And if they don't mask it, we can reverse it faster. Sometimes we ignore that niggly pain that we get until it becomes bad enough that you have to actually rest out from training and you lose out so much. In a scenario where you have an overuse injury at its initial stage, you can modify training such that you continue training, but you rest that overused muscle and it works. You don't lose out and you can continue from there. So I think you can never prevent it, no matter what we do. It is going to happen. The idea is to identify it early and treat it appropriately, full stop.
Do you think we're just not patient enough?
I think we are too patient sometimes with the injuries. You know, we follow like, okay, there's no pain, there's no gain.
That's pre, that's when you were having the injury.
So I feel that if we go back to basics where we have a good warm-up, good warm-down, appropriate technique, then we minimize the chances of having injury. But if you are performing at an elite level, your intensity is high enough, it is going to happen, but you try to minimize the occurrence and pick it up early and get it sorted out.
Okay. Your message, York, on for athletes and aspiring athletes?
Honestly, you go ahead, enjoy your training, enjoy your, I call it, enjoy your job and your passion for sports. Yeah?
Dr. Arjit?
Yeah, I think it's the same for a weekend warrior and an elite athlete. The only thing is you must always enjoy your job, and their job is sports. So enjoy it, then it won't be a
chore
going to work anymore.
Thank you both very much for joining me today, Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, and York Tashman, a sports therapist, speaking to us about training like an athlete on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.